Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Been shopping lately? For gas? Maybe a car? A house? Well, chances are you've seen prices heading north that made you wonder if inflation is afoot. This morning we learned that consumer prices are growing at a 5.4% annual clip. One of the big-name economists who has been warning about inflation is Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary, former president at Harvard, former chief economist at the World Bank. And when Larry Summers talks, people tend to listen. Larry Summers, welcome back to Here and Now.
I'm glad to be with you.
Let's talk briefly about the news of today. Consumer prices up 5.4% over last year. Does that sync up with your view that inflation may be on the way?
Yes, I think it suggests that inflation is here. Look, we have inflation that now since the beginning of the year has been running at above a 5% annual rate. And the question is, how's it going to move from here? And whenever you have demand exceeding supply, you have a few bottlenecks where the price increases are particularly pronounced. But I don't think that's a basis for serenity. And what we do see is two big things coming down the road. We see rental and housing costs going up at double-digit rates. Mm. And we have epic levels of labor shortage, as reported by employers. So we're starting with high inflation. We've got an economy that's going to grow at extremely high rates for the next quarter or two. We've got an unemployment rate 5.5 with an almost unprecedented degree of structural change in the economy. And so I think we're going to find ourselves with a new normal for inflation above 3%. And then the Fed is either going to be inconsistent with all the promises and commitments it's made, or it's going to have to attempt the task of slowing down the economy, which is rarely a controlled process.
Mm. I do want to ask you about the Fed, but first of all, just for the rest of us, you've talked about demand exceeding supply. Do you mean that a lot of employers and a lot of us, we just have a lot of money in our pockets from saving during the recession, from government stimulus, et cetera, and we're demanding a lot more things than the economy can supply?
That's a good way to put it. But to assume that inflation is just naturally going to have a soft landing with unprecedented labor shortage, unprecedented cash balances in people's bank accounts, that doesn't seem to me to be the right planning assumption.
Well, let's talk about the Fed. You fear, and others have presented the same fears, that if the economy overheats, starts running too fast, and suddenly the Fed has to hit the brakes and the economy comes to a screeching halt that delivers recession to us. Now, the chair of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, as you know, has said inflation signs are temporary, or as economists call it, transitory. And we're also seeing signs of potential economic cooling from the markets, Wall Street banks, some of them downgrading their outlooks for growth given the Delta variant. I mean, does the counter-argument have a point here?
Look, one should never be certain. Chairman Powell certainly did not say anything last winter that suggested that he recognized as any kind of realistic possibility the kind of ongoing 5% inflation that we're now seeing. So I think that the Fed needs to develop substantial humility from the magnitude of its forecasting errors. You know, Scott, the growth decline that you mentioned, that's not coming because we're deciding that people are likely to spend less. That's coming because we're deciding that the economy is likely to be able to produce less, that fewer people are going to be able to go back to the office than we thought a couple of months ago, that more parents are going to be staying home with their kids than we thought a couple months ago, that there's going to be less capacity to organize and arrange travel than we thought a couple months ago. So the slowdown, insofar as it's there and being forecast, is as much a slowdown of the economy's capacity as it is a slowdown of the economy's spending propensity.
Yeah, okay. We are seeing wages rising for restaurant and essential service sector workers who keep this economy running, and we're seeing consumer prices at the same time. For now, are American paychecks keeping up with American prices?
No, they've been lagging. The price increases have exceeded the wage increases, which is what always happens at the beginning of a wage price spiral. And so what I think will happen is that as the labor shortage issues become more acute, you'll start to see a big pickup in wages. I see this on Cape Cod where I'm on vacation. There are restaurants that usually have five waiters that now have three waiters, and the waiters are being run ragged. In the short run, that's really good profits for the restaurant owner because they're paying less in wages to waiters, and they're making the same number of meals, and so they're making more money. But that's not sustainable. The waiters will all quit unless more waiters are hired or they get paid more. And both those things are going to happen. That's going to raise labor cost bills. That in turn is going to feed into prices. So it's the catch-up of wages to prices that is going to be the next turn of the screw in this inflation cycle.
Let me ask you to step back a little from the immediate economic questions, and let's talk about the infrastructure bill, which, as you know, is moving quickly and perhaps before long could put $1 trillion into roads and bridges and the power grid. Now, you've been critical of some of the government stimulus during the pandemic, and yet you're in favor of this kind of infrastructure spending. How do you square the two?
I am, Scott. I've got, I think, a pretty simple view. It goes back to the demand and supply we've been talking about. I think strengthening our country's infrastructure will expand supply and therefore over time let us have more income without inflation. And I think that's broadly the right approach. If we have roads without potholes, our truck drivers will get where they're going faster and more safely, and that will increase the capacity of the economy. If we have more generous programs of supporting family leave, we'll be able to have more workers in the labor force and the economy will be able to produce more output. I do wish we would be paying for this. And I am concerned that, according to the Congressional Budget Office, this bill is going to be well short of being fully paid for. I'm concerned as we move to the much larger $3.5 trillion proposal that there be some real rigor in making sure that we're paying for what we're doing.
Finally, I want to ask you about the broader role of governments in this pandemic. I mean, you have argued even before COVID that public health crises tend to deliver panic and then complacency when the crisis ends. Is this, in your view, a moment for collective government action around the world, perhaps led by the United States, to turn this crisis into an opportunity here?
History is going to remember what we do or do not do with respect to an epic global pandemic and an epic threat of future global pandemics much longer than it's going to remember whether we put broadband into the middle of Amarillo, Texas, or how we change our family leave rules, or whether we give $600 checks to a selected set of American families. The United States should be leading a Marshall Plan type effort to put this global scourge behind us. It would cost less than 1% of the $3.5 trillion that's in this legislation, and it will be remembered as a huge historic error if we don't do it.
Okay, Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary under President Clinton, Director of the National Economic Council under President Obama, and President Emeritus of Harvard University. Larry, thanks for the time.
Thank you.